Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Keep It Close to Me, a podcast about the things we love and, you know, life and stuff. I'm Chris. I'm your host, your podcast pal. And today we are going to be talking about Wonder Woman and Spider-Man Homecoming, just a double super fun superhero summer movie spectacular. We've already seen, got some good Twitter questions. We're going to get to those.
That's right.
Hopefully. Unlike last time, we're going to get to those. But obviously, you may have just heard, I'm not doing this alone. I've got with me today good friend Matt.
Hi.
Is here again on an episode that is not a comics rule everything around me. Even though this episode is going to be very comic centric something. Both of these characters are from the comics.
Sure.
So we're going to be talking about that. Also, just completely coincidentally, Matt and I are almost dressed exactly alike today.
It's a Superman shirt and khaki shorts club.
Yeah, we and beard and dark hair. Like, we look like we planned this. And we were at the comic store earlier today, and like I walked in and saw him, and I was like, oh, you've got good taste in outfits as well. But I did not quite, I just saw you had the Superman shirt on. Then you put it together, and it's like we're dressed almost exactly alike. Anyway, so that's just a fun thing for you guys to think about at home when you're, you know, as you're listening to this. Know that the two of us are dressed very, very similarly. Would be hard for anyone to tell us apart, I think. Matt, he was like looking right at
me. If I commit a crime, and then they might pick you out of the lineup.
Right, yeah. Right. Matt was looking right at me as I said that. And then it was like, I saw him do this like sort of like eye dart. Like, I don't think we look that much alike. yeah, so let's get right into this thing. First things first, since it came out first and we've got a little bit of distance from it, Wonder Woman, what did you think?
That was great.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Oh. Also, everyone, spoilers. Do not forget. spoilers for both of these movies if you haven't seen them yet. So, first, I mean, goodness gracious, go see both of these movies, correct?
Yeah, both of them.
If you don't want to have anything spoiled for you, I'll just say that we both would give these enthusiastic 2 thumbs up. Definitely go see.
Or maybe if you've only seen Wonder Woman and you've not seen Spider-Man yet, we'll be careful not to spoil Spider-Man while talking about Wonder Woman. But maybe not vice versa.
Right. I have no idea what that means. Yeah. So definitely go see them movies. Both very, very good. Great superhero fair. This has been a great superhero comic movie summer already. Yeah. And we've got more stuff to go this year.
Yeah, because Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was this summer too.
Was great.
Yeah.
And we got Thor coming up, which looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Justice League is also coming up, which looks like it's going to be a train wreck. But hey, you know what? Now we'll get into talking about Wonder Woman. Could not have been more pleasantly surprised by how great Wonder Woman was.
Yes.
Wowzers, so good. I did not have a lot of faith in them to pull Wonder Woman off
after Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman.
Suicide Squad, and just like everything that they've like announced and done, and like all the trouble they've had with stuff, they've gone through like 4 directors on the Flash movie.
That may just never get made. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, they've gone through like 3 directors on the Batman, including the Batman.
Yeah.
Saying he doesn't want to direct it anymore, which is like.
That took a lot of steam out of it for me. Like when he was kind of distancing himself from the project.
And it's like, but you still have to be in it. You still have to be Batman. What? All of that stuff is very worrying to me. And then, like, when you hear just all, it's crazy to think about, you know, like, even right up until when it came up, I was still very hesitant and, like, skeptical that they were going to be able to, even when seeing some of the reviews and people, like, no, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
But they pulled it off. And all the kudos in the world to Patty Jenkins, the director, and I think Alan Heinberg is the writer. And I'm sure there's tons of other people involved and whatever, but it's like, and also Chris Pine and Gal Gadot, is like, Gal Gadot really, I think she looks cool. You know, she looks like a great maybe choice for Wonder Woman, but I'm just like, her acting has not convinced me.
Prior to this.
Yeah, but man, I was like, she's wonderful.
Yeah.
She's like so great. And man, I said wonderful and did not even
She communicated, to... I guess in that role, what was so endearing to me, just an earnestness.
Yeah.
Brought back to a like a superhero role that's, I mean, not been seen since like the old Superman movies.
Yeah.
Just a really earnest,
America,
good-hearted. That's true. Oh, I'm thinking just DC.
Oh, just DC.
Yeah, okay. That we've not had in a DC hero since the Christopher Reeve movies. That just kind of purely good, good-hearted, earnest.
But not played in like a... not like in an embarrassing way. Not like, oh, look at how corny this she is.
Right.
It's like, yeah, she's earnest, but she's like, it's the way everything is handled, the way that like people respond to her, it's all done with like respect and like you never feel like her, you never feel like her convictions are silly. And right. I feel like that's the big problem that Zack Snyder has had with Superman is that he seems to not get that it's like you don't have to make Superman just like it seems like they're scared to even call him Superman. You mm-hmm. know, that the movie's called Man of Steel. You know, like they don't even want to call they're like, this is too silly, you know, or stuff. It's like we want it to be so like they make him scowling all the time, kind of in like
as always, if the only two choices are dark and gritty or corny.
Like your only choices, yeah, are like
camp.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, he's got to be Adam West, Batman, or, you know, that's like the only other way you can do it. And it's like, you can, the way you make him not silly, it's like how Marvel does it with Captain America, is you go like, you have the way that people respond to him and the world reacts to him and how he handles things mm-hmm. is how you go like, yeah, he's kind of old fashioned with some of this stuff, but he's, you know, or he's earnest or he's right. Where his convictions are of like, no, I'm going to just do the right thing no matter what is... if you don't treat it as silly, no one will think it's silly.
Right.
Like,
yeah, let it be aspirational, inspirational, and yeah. And
it will be.
Yeah.
instead of being worried that people are going to make fun of it, you know, if you just do a good job with stuff and present it in the right way, you can have characters do anything. You know, you can have right. them be whatever which way. Like, there's nothing, like, the Joker is silly. Like, he doesn't have to, but you can do him in a way that makes him go like, oh, no, this guy is, there's menace to this.
Right.
Instead of just like a silly, but you don't have to go all the way to like, oh, he's just a constant murder machine. You can, I mean, there's lots of different ways you can interpret these characters and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Chris Pine did great. Gal Gadot did great. The period piece kind of setting of the story set during World War One. That, I think that worked really well.
Really suited. And helped it stand apart from, you know, give it its own feel.
Mm-hmm. Great action sequences and yeah, it's well done.
I was going to say speaking of Chris Pine, wouldn't it have been neat if they had spent as much time in Man of Steel trying to establish how competent and cool Lois Lane was as they did trying to establish how cool and competent Steve Trevor was in this, you know, like, which I loved how they handled everything in it. I wish that they, you know, this had been how they'd handled the first Superman movie. Mm-hmm. Man of Steel or whatever. But it's like, you know, Lois is like, just here she is. It's like, it should be that you feel for, like, if you've never heard of, which most people I'm sure seeing Wonder Woman have never
heard of
Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, they did such a cool job. And even though they, you know, they changed a bunch of stuff from the comics, they still gave you a reason where it's like, you get why they have this kind of interest in each other. You know, they have, that there's there's any kind of emotional connection between
right.
the two of them.
You want to see why does this, I mean, you could get why a man would fall in love with like this Amazon
yeah.
princess, but yeah, why does this amazing, powerful warrior woman, why is she going to fall for just a regular human guy? And so they, with his character and his integrity and just the way they kind of built, set him up as a being kind of worthy, I guess, of being at her side kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he gets a whole heroic arc of his own.
Well, and also just kind of like seeing what she, like the kinds of sort of like how she inspires him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't see any of that with Lois in Man of Steel. She's just like kind of following him around because it's a story. And then it's like, and there's, I mean, why does he care about her? Other than, because you know, Superman and Lois Lane are supposed to like each other.
Right.
It's like, other than like, she's the girl, only girl he runs into in the movie. You know, it's like, there's no, there's, I just like, it's so nice when you go like, oh, this movie is about why these characters, what they want and what, you know, what they care about and why stuff matters. Like, I feel like you understand these characters so much better than you do in that, where it seems like even the people in Man of Steel, where it seems like the people making the movie don't understand the characters, right. Much less, you know, do we as an audience understand the characters other than, you know, almost 80 years of pop culture that has told us, oh, this is what Superman does.
Yeah.
This is who Lois Lane is. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. So I mean, Wonder Woman was definitely a good movie. I hesitate to even bring like any criticism at all because like stuff gets nitpicked so much. You just want something just to stand as good.
Yeah.
But was there anything about it that you changed or didn't care for as much?
Oh, one other positive thing I want to say about it real quick. And this kind of ties into that just a little bit. Before Spider-Man, we saw a trailer, the new trailer for Justice League.
Oh, no. That wasn't on mine.
Okay. Well, it was on ours. And it was like, it had some new, there's like a couple new shots in there and stuff. And it was like situated a little different. And I was like, so this is kind of neat. But it was like, it also just looked like such a constant visual mess.
Yeah.
At no point does it look like they are ever actually anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, even when they're just standing in, like, a room, you're like, this room feels fake.
It feels more like Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, where it just feels like, you know, they're all, at no point are they not surrounded by green screens. Even if there's, like, real stuff kind of, like, a little bit around them. Mm-hmm. Even when the world is supposed to feel, like, gigantic, you feel like they're just a tiny little person on this tiny little set. And then the rest is all computers. And it all just looks so fake. Instead of looking like grand, it looks fake. Mm-hmm. You go like, oh, that's where you dropped them on this digital picture. You know, it's like if you just cut someone out and put it in, like, it's like putting an action figure out in your front yard and then taking a picture and be like, wow, look at the sketch. You know, it just seems fake. And I loved in Wonder Woman, even though I know there was still a lot of
right
that kind of digital stuff done, so many times it just felt like, oh, they're really outside somewhere.
On real sets. And
yeah, you know, they're locations. Really just in some woods. Everything does not have to be... Yeah, there's just... Our brains are so hardwired to be able to spot fake. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you have these... It's like you don't have to have everything be I don't know. I know this is like nothing that's ever going to get changed, but it's like, well, actually there's tons of this in Spider-Man too, where it's like, and we can talk about that later, but there's like tons of stuff where it's like, it's just an elevator.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, it's just some kind of vault, or it's like, it's just the back of a truck. You know, he's in a, mm-hmm. in a, you know, it's a fancy high-tech truck.
But it feels like a real space.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I understand what's going on here. And it feels like they're really in that space, even though you know that the vulture's wings are CGI right. or whatever. And the further you get away from stuff that feels like you can kind of really tell that there's someone there.
That was the uncanny valley, whatever, yeah, kicks in real quick.
Yeah, it's like your brain just, like, okay, so real quick, just to jump to it also, it's like, when they're fighting on that beach in Spider-Man, you're like, yeah, they're just this is just at a beach.
Real sand.
They're just standing there on a beach. And even though there's like special effects happening, it doesn't take you out of it. It doesn't feel like they're just two, you know, little care, yeah. you know, just standing in a green screen somewhere. So with Wonder Woman, I love that there are points where it's like, wow, it really looks like they're just in some old town, mm-hmm. or they're really just in this bar, or wherever. Things felt real, even when you knew they weren't. It had more of like a realness to it that made it feel makes you able to buy into what's happening. And that's like a subtle thing, but your brain latches on to it, you know? And it's the kind of thing that even if people don't realize that that's what there is happening, your brain is
right. When your brain can tell it's just all computerized and fake, you don't have, the stakes aren't the same.
Yeah. You just kind of check out, like there's that kind of attachment of like,
you're watching a cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, so it's just, anyway. I think the main thing that I would criticize in, Wonder Woman was, when they're showing that flashback of what happened with Ares and he still has that big mustache and it's like in ancient times and he still has that like World War One style British mustache.
Yeah.
I was just like, come on. Y'all couldn't put like a young guy's head on him or something, or a whole beard. You don't have to have him have a mustache.
We can figure out it's the same guy.
Yeah. You're telling us it's the same guy. He's telling the story of what happened. He could look completely different. He's like, oh, I changed my shape. What? It's like, we see him transform from one thing to another. He doesn't. And so like, then when he transformed into the big scary Ares and he's still like that big monster body, but then he's still got that head with the mustache. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, come on. Like, he should have just had like a monster face then. Or I thought at first they were just going to have him be like Magneto looking, you know,
right.
Like just guy in a suit. And it's like, oh, okay.
Just really powerful.
Yeah. But then like, then he turned into a big monster. I'm like, all right. But then that helmet comes on and that helmet's covering most of it off. But he's still got that David Thewlis face under there with that mustache. And I was just like,
That was a little hard to take seriously. Yeah. The villains. Yeah. Probably to me, if there's any weak part of Wonder Woman, it'd be more, having the villains be more developed would have helped a lot. More, have Dr. Poison be more developed. And then with Ares, and I was thinking about it afterwards and talking with people afterwards, I think part of the reason Ares felt underdeveloped was part of it was the plot, part of the story is they kind of left you as the audience wondering, is there a real Ares or is this just something in her head? It reminded me a lot of reading the Ultimates and how they treated Thor. Like, is Thor really a Norse god or is he a crazy guy?
Who has powers.
And as the audience, like, we're kind of going to leave you in suspense. And Wonder Woman played Ares that way. Like, it was clear Wonder Woman's mission was to get into that war and kill Ares and that'd solve the whole war and then humans would all love each other. Then as the audience, you're like, that can't be that simple.
Yeah.
Like, Ares can't be to blame he can't be the only one to blame for World War One. But will she find some kind of embodiment of what she's looking for or not? When she finally does, you get an Ares that's not been super well developed because of the way they played it. So that maybe the conflict wasn't quite what it would have been. The stakes maybe didn't feel quite what they would have been if you cared. Anyway, that's...
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. That's fair. But I like that they played it like that because you are kind of going the whole time like, she can clearly do all this amazing stuff, but it's like, we know that you're using a real world thing of World War One. So we know that there was not just some, you know, like Greek god to blame for that. So it's like, how are they going to play that out? Because you're like, she has to do something with Ares if this is her whole thing. Because it's like, then otherwise it's like, boy, this movie's been a waste of time. Like, or she just, it feels like a failure, you know? And it's like, she has to succeed. Even if it doesn't succeed the way she wants to. You know, because,
And also, as far as her succeeding, you couldn't have her kill Ares and then all war and violence disappear from the earth either. That'd been kind of...
She has to fail and succeed.
She has to fail and realize there's more going on. Like,
yeah, she has to fail and succeed somehow in a way that's, like, emotionally and, like... action-wise, exciting and satisfying to an audience. This movie had a real tricky, like, because you know that she's got to get from where this is, especially when you're doing one of these origin story movies where it's like a character and you're really having to like introduce all of this mythology of the character and trying to like really set this character up, which you showed her in that other movie, but you don't really know much about her. And people I feel like the average person doesn't really know much about Wonder Woman other than like, oh, Lasso of Truth.
They would recognize the image.
Yeah, but it's like Lasso of Truth.
Yeah.
She's got the bracelets, bounce bullets off of or whatever. Invisible plane, which she never had in this, but I feel like eventually could show up.
Yeah. Well, that might make a good transition to talking about Spider-Man.
Because invisible plane? For a second, my mind completely blanked. I was like, what?
Yeah. That there was an invisible jet.
There literally was an invisible plane.
But it wasn't in Wonder Woman.
Yeah. In a comic movie this summer, there was an invisible plane, but it wasn't Wonder Woman. You know, instead of doing that, though, real quick, let's answer some of the Wonder Woman questions.
Okay, yeah. We did have some Wonder Woman questions from a couple weeks ago, and we didn't get to talk about it. The first... Which... let's say who it's from. At Fizz versus the...
World.
Fizz versus the World. Which Wonder Woman rogue do you wish got more play?
Man, I don't know. Boy, is this a question for Benito Cereno. I don't know, man. I'm not like super up on all of her rogues. I would be very interested to see how they would do. I like Giganta. And I like Cheetah. And I would be very curious to see how they would try to do those in a movie. I know we can do a big person now in a movie, thanks to giant Ant-Man becoming
proof
giant
of concept
man.
In Civil War.
Yeah, there. They're like, all right, we know how this can look. But she's got so many. I know that she has so many more. And Benito has been doing a series, I think, on some of her like lesser known villains. I'll try to find that and put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be good
for you guys to check.
Yeah, I know. Ares, Hercules. I wasn't even familiar with Dr. Poison before the movie. She was new to me. And then you mentioned Cheetah and Giganta and then just different Justice League class villains. But as far as in her particular,
I know there's tons of them, but it's like, I don't know. Good question. Good question.
Yeah. This one's from at Caltreg.
Luke.
Yeah. New Luke City. Wonder Woman, what weapons or tools should she have?
With Wonder Woman?
Yeah, so what are kind of the definitive...
She's got to have that lasso.
Got to have the lasso.
I loved how they... I wish they had kind of gotten to use it a little more in the movie even. Like, some of the way she... that, especially in that first time where she really starts using it, and just seeing how it, like, lit up it is when she's using it. It's like...
When it glows, yeah.
Yeah, super awesome. I'm happy to not see her. I was glad when that sword got dissolved because I'm happy to not see her with a sword.
I think lasso and bracelets, you got to have them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then sword or second other weapons and stuff.
I'd be into seeing her throw that tiara.
Yeah.
I've seen her. That's a...
Yeah.
Actually, I just watched an episode of Brave and the Bold, Batman Brave and the Bold, where she does that, and it's pretty awesome. She throws it like... but, you know, like Batarang style.
Right.
That's all I got. I mean, she doesn't need much else.
No. No, she doesn't need much else.
She's got all the powers. I mean, like, I'm curious to know how they're going to, what level they're going to approach her with moving forward as far as, like, how, you know, bullets bounce off of Superman.
Right.
It's like she seems like she can get hurt, but in the comics, you know, she's very much like on par with Superman, or, you know, close to on par with Superman power wise. They don't make it seem like she can fly in this. In the comics, she can fly, even though she's got the jet.
I'd have to see it again. I want to say that. And
she does some real big jumps.
Yeah, maybe that's
it. But they never have her like
straight up flying.
Every time she's jumping from like one place to another. Well, because there's even that scene at the beginning where she's testing to see if she can jump from that ledge over to the building where the sword is, the God Killer.
Yeah.
Pretty on the nose name. I was like, y'all couldn't come up with something more like Lord of the Rings sounding or.
So that's it on the Wonder Woman question. Oh, okay. The rest of these are Venom questions.
Sorry, Venom. Let's move on to now I'm going to feel bad that we didn't answer these Venom questions, but that's all right. It's too far gone. We got to talk about Spider-Man.
Even though Homecoming.
Venom questions are kind of related to Spider-Man, especially since they're saying now that they are going to do a Venom movie, which, as much as I love Tom Hardy, which, man, he is so good in everything. But
I wish they'd just slow down with all that.
Just
quit
trying to make these cinematic universes. Make one good movie. Make a movie that makes us beg you for more movies in this world before you go like, We're going to announce five movies over the next 5 years, or over the next 4 years, 3 years, whatever. And it's, we're going to, characters you know you care about, like The Mummy. And
I'm thinking just where Spider-Man's position now. They gave Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios, you know, oversight and creative control with this last, and which is still Sony's movie, but it's very much also a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie.
Boy, is it.
And if they could just, I mean, I feel like we'll get there. We'll get to places where we can have a Venom that fits into that and other stuff that fits into that.
But announcing don't rush stuff. It. Yeah. I know you're so excited to want to. We still own this. We still own these things. We're going to make another Fantastic Four.
And even just what we know is coming down to the pike with the MCU lends itself towards, like, so he's got Infinity Wars, this big intergalactic space adventure possibly. And that, of course, lends itself organically to a black costume type story. But they don't want to do it that way. They want to get straight to Venom and get him out there and...
They got to just keep trying to make money. And when it's like, you want to make Venom before you even have Spider-Man. Like, they announced that Venom movie before Homecoming came out. Also, man, my gosh. Do those two Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, they're just like embarrassing looking to me now.
Compared to now.
Compared to Homecoming. Yeah. Like, because, all right, so like, I remember seeing both of those movies. And the first one, I was like, it was all right. It had some stuff I liked. I liked the chemistry between
the two of them. I didn't hate it. There's stuff I liked.
Stuff I liked in it. I was like, I'm not crazy about this costume, but, you know, whatever.
But then by the sequel, he had him.
Just completely had like the Tobey Maguire costume on, which I love. There's like no explanation whatsoever. Just all of a sudden he's in a completely different suit. No, just give me one line of dialogue that explains this stuff. Like that drives me crazy. Anyway. But you know, like, I remember seeing that second Amazing Spider-Man, and I didn't really like it, but I was like, I liked it okay, but there was tons of stuff I didn't like about it, but there was also stuff in there where I was like, and like, we watched it and reviewed it for the Gravity Falls Gossiper, Eugene and I did back when it came out, like, you know, and I remember saying at one point, I was like, I think this has got the best on-screen version of Spider-Man we've seen so far. Not in that, like, not in literally how the character acts, mm-hmm. but it's like just visually the way that they had him moving and like some of that stuff. I was like, this is the closest to like really feeling like it looks like
Spider-Man. It looked great.
Some of the stuff. I mean, like, I don't think that Jamie Foxx's Electro looked great, but I don't think that ridiculous rhino looked great. even though it's a cool idea to have it be like a big suit. But it looked so fakey, like you got that little window that just looks like pasted on of like Paul Giamatti in there. Like it just couldn't look any like that's terrible looking, like special effects wise. Anyway, so then you compare that to this, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, those movies are so embarrassing. They're such embarrassing messes, mm-hmm. like compared to this.
So what do you like about Spider-Man Homecoming?
Everything. Oh my gosh. First of all right, so I kind of got into a conversation the other day with someone where they were like, they said, so of the three Spider-Men we've had, who's your favorite? I was like, oh, this guy. I was like, this totally feels the most like Spider-Man to me. This person I was talking to is not like a real big comic person though. And she was like, oh, really? I was like, yeah. And hers was like Tobey Maguire, and then this, and then Tom Holland, and mm-hmm. then Andrew Garfield. And she was saying that like she just thought Tobey Maguire. She's like, well, I've seen those movies a million times. I really liked them, and I was like, oh, I really like them too.
Yeah,
I just bought the Blu-rays of the Spider-Man of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. Bought all three of them. I am one of those people that really enjoys Spider-Man 3, even with all of its flaws. There's the stuff in it that I like.
You can see there's a good movie in there.
Yeah.
And it's mostly the Sandman plot. If you could surgically cut out the Venom plot from Spider-Man 3.
Well, and again, this is the whole problem with this movie was the fact that Sam Raimi did not want to do a Venom movie.
No.
He wanted to do the Sandman. And they were like, no, you got to put Venom in it. And he's like, there's already too much movie.
Thankfully, Sony's learned from that mistake.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Man, talk about just let these people make good movies. And then we will beg you to make more movies.
Exactly.
Don't,
I would say Tom Holland's my favorite Peter Parker / Spider-Man so far too, but being fully aware that he gets to build on those previous performances. Like Tobey Maguire shows up and there'd not been a Spider-Man movie before. So I feel like Homecoming had the advantage of being able to pull the best of what worked and ditch what didn't work.
Yeah. But that's how Marvel has done with all of these movies. They've taken all the best. They've taken like, all right, with Captain America, they go like, all right, we can mine this entire almost 80 years and like, let's pull out the best,
right?
You know, the stuff that really works about this character. And that's what we, you know, galvanize into like, this is our version of him. The thing I was talking to this friend about though is like, the thing that makes him feel more like Spider-Man to me is the fact that he actually feels like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield both clearly are 20 somethings pretending to be teenagers. And
by the end of the first movie
Peter Parker's,
Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, he's already in college.
I said Peter Parker. Tobey Maguire is like long before the end of the first movie. He's done with high school.
Yeah.
He starts off in the middle of high school and then it's like he's graduating like not even halfway through the movie.
Well, he's smart. Man. Fast track.
But Harry and MJ are too.
They're smart. They're all smart.
Flash Thompson. They're all smart. They couldn't wait to get him out of high school.
Yeah.
They're like, which I thought was something like super great about this when I felt like they were even commenting on that in this move in Homecoming, where they have the part where he's like, man, I am so far. He's like, when Ned is saying like, do you really want to be a high school dropout? He's like, man, I am so far beyond high school. And then to have him go, you know what? Let's pump the brakes here.
Right.
To actually make that decision to like pump the brakes and say, let's not. I need to just go worry about being myself.
Talking about the bit at the end where Tony's offering to move him to the Avengers compound.
Yeah, it's like, you're done with school. You can just come be an Avenger. And he's like, you know what? I'm good being me.
Yeah.
And it's like that too. I feel like all of that is very much commentary on how those other movies were like so quick to want to try to like make him feel more grown up.
And random because it's in a Spider-Man movie, but Tony and Pepper are back together. I guess they worked out whatever problems they had in Civil War. Yeah,
that which I was like absolutely loved seeing that.
Gwyneth like, just walks in. It's she like, walks okay. in
and it's like, oh, thank goodness. They got it worked out. That really... Yeah. Well, because I feel like that was a huge part of Civil War was like that, you know, everything that Tony was... And I said this in the Civil War episode, but it's like everything that Tony was saying, like Cap was going through, like emotionally stuff, it was like, this is what you're going through, Tony,
right.
because of you and Pepper. Let's hit pause real quick because April's about to walk in that door. So anyway, yeah, I was very glad to see Tony and Pepper back together. But this is the first time he's really felt like this feels like a kid. And man, you want to talk about super emotional, powerful that scene where he pulls off that famous Spider-Man lifting the thing off him scene. But when
that
at
was
first,
fantastic.
When he's like scared and crying, and I was like,
help.
Yeah, he's like. He feels like a kid. And I feel like being a kid is intrinsic to what starting off Spider-Man is about. Like with neither of those other two, you never feel like he's really a kid. He's like with Andrew Garfield, especially, it's like, he's cool. He's got it all figured out. He's like doing stuff. And it's like, he's like kind of like wisecracky and making jokes when he's not Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of like Spider-Man, I feel like is like, it gives Peter Parker this chance to be someone that he's not like, and you, man, the way that they show some of that stuff where it's like, he's trying to be someone he's not sometimes. He's trying to be Spider-Man.
Right.
And people are like, you're just a kid.
He's
like,
trying to figure out who he is and go
through all and that he's
adolescent stuff.
Well, so in that scene when he's like, he's scared. You're like, oh my gosh.
And when he's screaming for help, that is, it's visceral, man. That grabs you.
Yeah. And then also, oh my gosh, just thinking about it, like, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it, like when he gets out of it. And it's like, he's having to say, he's like, no, you're not just a kid. You're Spider-Man. Yeah. That come on, Spider-Man is like, that's like goosebumps. Like, and it didn't hit me as hard in the theater as it did later when I was thinking about it. But just that, like, come on, Spider-Man, like, man, that's going to be one of those things that like, stays with me, you know, I think, and stays with other, I feel like the reaction I've heard from other people is also, that's going to be one of those things that just sticks with us. Like, you know, like that Captain America, like, you know, I could do this all day.
Yeah.
You know, like just that, like, you know,
just a perfect distillation of,
yeah. What, like that Han Solo, I know,
yeah.
You know, like it's one of those things where it's just like, that's perfect. Like that gets the character so well. He's like that ability to try to like have to, you have no choice but to be something beyond yourself. Like,
yeah.
Like, yes, Peter is scared, but you're not just Peter anymore. And it's kind of like a growing up thing metaphor maybe too, of like, yeah, Peter is scared, but you're not just Peter anymore.
So now, the whole power and responsibility thing, like if I don't get up and stop this guy, then lots of people are going to get hurt and it's on me and no one else can do it. And yeah.
Without having to have any of that stuff actually happen with seeing Uncle Ben get killed. And like, they didn't show it in Civil War either. Just all you got to have him say is that thing is like, when you can do what I can do and you don't, and then something bad happens, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You know, it's on you, man. They don't ever even say the great power, great responsibility.
They don't need to now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is
You still get it.
I'm going to say Michael Keaton was amazing in the role. Give us, just such a great, great villain there. For me, it felt like his arc. And also, he had a whole arc. He wasn't just a villain, but he had a whole, they gave him a Breaking Bad storyline, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, he even yelled, you know, I'm doing this for my family. You know?
Yeah.
And a lot of those scenes with him and the other little minor league villains felt a lot like that. We've got to keep this operation running, and I'm not going to let anything stop me. And angry Michael Keaton Vulture felt very much like angry Walter White.
Yeah.
And in a good way.
Yeah. Not in like a ripoff really kind of way.
No.
Like
what a great way to do this character that I'm sure when Vulture is announced to be the villain years before, you know, you're like, okay, we'll see how they pull this off. And they couldn't have done a better job.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Keaton is like amazing no matter what. He's usually like, you know, one of the best parts of anything that he's in. He's great.
The revelation of him being Liz's dad.
Seriously, that whole scene, like I leaned over to April at one point during that. And I was like, in that car ride, just that whole time, like waiting for the pictures and in the car ride, I was like, this is literally the most tense I have ever been in one of these superhero movies.
They take the trope of the having to meet the girl's dad and you're already feeling anxious, already feeling nervous to be grilled. You know, we've gone on an important date and the girl's dad makes you feel nervous, and they crank that up to 11 because he's the villain. And, and when he first opens the door, I'm not thinking he's the dad. He got to the house.
He got to the house first.
And, oh man, that's bad. And then, it's a whole other level. And and then as I thought about it more, you know, because people always nitpick, well, this is what they change. This is what it's not like that in the books. But there is a precedent for Liz Allen to have a villainous father. You know, she ends up in the comics marrying Harry Osborn. So Norman Osborn is her father-in-law. And, and there's a precedent for that familial relationship to a villain, but her still being a pure character for the most part. And, man, I love the Liz character.
Yeah.
Even when Peter let her down again and again, she was never mean about it. She was real generous to him about it.
Well, I just thinking about that, as you were talking about that, I realized it's like also Michael Keaton, this version of the Vulture is kind of almost basically like a better version of the Green Goblin.
Yes.
It's like this guy who's like, you know, he's got a family, and I mean, he's always been sort of more like villainy, but, like more of like a villain. And this is, you really feel like you're like, this is not a bad guy.
Right.
This is a guy who's like gotten pushed to do this. And he's like, he's had to go in this direction.
I love him working in salvage. I think that's a perfect.
Well, and then like when he blows up that first Shocker, the not Tom Hardy Shocker, which that's that guy that looks just like Tom Hardy. And I was like, is that really him? And it's like, it's weird to see him go from being like, you were like one of the leads in Prometheus to then being like a bit player in this. I was like, there's no way it's him. Isn't that guy like that? But it was. But when he shot him with that thing and it just evaporated him, and he was like, I thought this was the anti-gravity gun. You know, he wasn't even planning to kill him. But like, you know, when you go like, he's like, all right, well, that's another corner he's turned. And so it's like,
that part felt, yeah, very Breaking Bad to me. Like, yeah. Didn't mean to go that far, but I'm okay with it. And I'm going to embrace it and move forward.
Like, yeah, he's like, I didn't mean to do that, but I have no problem doing it because I'm not going to let you mess up. That's how much I care about my family. And that part, even though that when he was like, when he figures out who Peter is and he's like, look, I'm going to give you the chance.
In the car.
Yeah. He's like, you saved my daughter's life. I do not... you know, take that lightly. That means the world to me.
Right.
He's like, so I'm going to give you the chance to just drop this, like, and just leave it alone and we can go our separate ways and he's not just like, oh, I'm going to get you, you know, whatever. Also, I love the fact that now we finally had like one movie where the bad guy, you know, is not going to go after Peter's love interest because it's his daughter.
Yeah.
There's no damsel in distress bit for that. Like, I mean, you do have that one part where everyone's in danger.
But it's several classmates.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. It's not just her. But like to have that just once to have it go like, well, he's not going to just go after Spider-Man's girlfriend. It was like such a relief because I was like, oh, she's going to be fine for the rest of this movie now that we know what has happened. But seriously, I was like, I've never been so tense in a superhero movie. And it's all taken place in a car.
On the way to a school dance.
The way to a school dance, they're not even driving fast. They're not in their costumes. And I was just like...
Every little line of dialogue, too. Like, Liz mentions, oh, Peter knows Spider-Man. He works at the Stark Industries. You're like, no, don't say that.
Please. The whole time, you're like, you know he's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so you're just sitting there the whole time going like, how long is it going to take? When's he going to figure it out? Really, how's he going to figure it out? Yeah, it's like, that's... It's like that Hitchcock thing where he says, like, if you put a bomb under a table and it blows up, you scare the audience for, like, a second. If you have two people sitting in a room and then a bomb blows up, you startle people for, like, 5 seconds or whatever. He's like, but if you have two people talking in a room and you show them underneath the table, there's a bomb with a 5-minute timer on it, you have them, you know.
Every line is.
Yeah, everything extra. Is just like, oh, my God. Get out of, you know, it's like that whole thing. And so it's like, this was such an incredible, so much, we could keep talking about this.
Well, do we have questions?
Yeah, let's do some questions. Spider-Man? I feel like we should do another episode about this maybe even.
Well, we should. Maybe we could go watch it.
I want to see it again. We should go see it again. All right. Jordan Gibson at Gibson Comics, good friend Jordan, asks, what B through Z level villain or villains do you want to see appear in Spidey's sequel? Matt has already got his hand up.
So when Tinker is figuring out all these different technology things, and so one of the things they use for stealing, heisting, is an open up these portals. Did you think of the spot? Did you think?
Oh, I didn't even think of that. You started talking, I was like, I know this is where you're going.
Yeah, that's, man, they got the spot. They got his technology all figured out. Just slap that on a costume for a dude, and he can be like reaching through these portals.
They'd have to come up with a cooler costume for him, because that just black, that white leotard with the black
circles on it. I feel like they could do it, though.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I mean, yeah. I feel like they could totally pull off a version of it, but it's like...
But that's the Z-lister I thought of immediately when I saw that was the spot.
Man, I would love to see... Well, especially the way that they treated... obviously, they brought... That guy is supposed to be Matt Gargan, and Matt Gargan, and is supposed to be the Scorpion.
Tattoo.
I would be very interested to see how they would pull off the Scorpion. That's a character that I've liked since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I got some Spider-Man comic. I know what it was. I got like a Spider-Man comic. It was like a little like mini comic that came in a package of like Capri Sun or something.
Yeah.
You know, like in a carton of Capri Suns or whatever. And that Scorpion was the villain in that.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, though, as much as I liked Alfred Molina as Dr. Octopus, and this is not your question, Jordan, but I'm just, I had this, this is another conversation I had with somebody the other day where I was talking about how I would be very interested to see how, because they've cast some of these things so well, I'd be very interested to see how they would cast some of these other characters.
Like, to do Dr. Octopus again?
If they did Dr. Octopus again. But yeah, Z-level guys, or B through Z-level guys, yeah, I'd love to see the Scorpion, just to see how they pulled that off. Yeah, that's going to be mine. I wouldn't mind seeing Kraven.
I feel like, so we're talking about, we're having six major Spider-Man movies in now. We've seen, now, Spider-Man's depth chart, man, he's got, for his villains, he's got a ton, but we've seen a lot of the big ones now. So big ones that have not yet been done are Kraven. I feel
Mysterio.
Yeah, Kraven and Mysterio would be great to see a sequel.
How they could like really do something crazy with Mysterio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get like deeper than that, probably like some of the guys from Superior Foes or something,
mm-hmm.
like the Beetle or
Boomerang and
Boomerang. Yeah, some of those guys or Cardiac. Is he a bad guy? Technically like a vigilante? Yeah.
No, Mysterio would be a great kind of. They could do a trippy kind of movie.
And Mysterio is who?
Chameleon. Chameleon and Mysterio could be together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Originally that was who Sam Raimi wanted to be one of the villains in Spider-Man 4 if they had gone ahead and let him do it. And it was going to be Bruce Campbell. With the idea being that every time you'd seen Bruce Campbell in the other three movies,
it was Mysterio.
It was Mysterio.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Not like being evil, just like.
You could have Kraven and Chameleon together, aren't they? They're brothers.
They're supposed to be brothers. Something like that. Yeah. At Daniel Feltz asks, there's a really tense scene when Peter meets his date's dad. Did you ever have a similar experience when you were in high school? This is a great question, Dan. I like this one because it takes the thing we're talking about and then gets us into a life and stuff question.
I'm trying to think if I've ever been really intimidated by a date's dad.
By somebody's dad. I didn't get to do a lot of dating in high school because I was not. I did not really have any dates in high school. nobody wanted to go out with me in high school. But there was a girl I went out with in like senior year who her dad was like a big intimidating looking kind of guy. So I was like very nervous about him. But then he was like super duper nice.
Mm-hmm.
He was like real gregarious and friendly.
Yeah, I want to say any time there's ever been a dad to meet, it's been really nice. I can't think of a time that I've been intimidated.
Lucked out. that we've had a lot of. I remember a girlfriend's stepdad, who a girlfriend who I'm currently married to, former ex girlfriend now wife, whose stepdad is kind of intimidating. But that wasn't in high school.
I remember feeling intimidated to ask Jackie, my wife, to ask her dad about us getting married, but like he was just like, "Yeah, if she wants to." I expected it to be a much more because I've worked up courage for like.
I was
a month
more nervous about asking. Yeah, when that happened, I was more nervous about asking, sort of like talking to her mom about it, than talking to her dad because her dad was like, April's dad is like great. He's like such a nice guy. And has been so like welcoming and kind to me the whole time. So anyway, so not really. I'm sure like once we stop talking, I'll think of something.
Exactly.
But, great question though, Dan. At James D. Leach asks, do you think Wonder Woman could be a turning point for the DCEU or does one movie not affect the brand as a whole? Man, I certainly hope so. I hope that they have learned some lessons from this. And the fact that Joss Whedon has been brought in to take over Justice League. And even though, I mean, obviously the circumstances surrounding that are horrible. And it's like, as much as I may not like some of Zack Snyder's movies, I mean, good grief. You don't want to, none of this stuff is like important enough.
Right.
That like, I would never wish ill on any of these people, even if I'm like, I wish that you would stop making this movie.
I think DC is definitely aware of how well Wonder Woman was received, and I would bet that we're going to see more like that in the future.
I would hope. I hope they don't pull the complete wrong lessons out of it, like sometimes these studios seem to do, where they're like, oh, this was popular. Well, it's like with Deadpool, and they were like, oh, this was popular because it was rated R. Now we got to make a bunch of rated R. And it's like, you don't have to make a Lobo movie now. Like, just... We liked this because it was a nice change of pace. Don't go try to make the exact same
thing. I remember reading
something
from James Gunn around the time Deadpool came out, being worried. People are going to learn the wrong lesson from this. Yeah.
Please, please don't learn the wrong lesson. I know there's a lot of you Hollywood types listening to this, so please don't get the wrong lessons from this or from...
It's not too late.
It's not too late to not make stupid decisions. All right. At SVA, a.k.a. Beardy, asks Tom Holland, best Spider-Man on film? Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Should Sony keep him in the MCU? Absolutely.
Yes.
Should the DCEU take a hint and learn from Wonder Woman? Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Three of... Yes, yes, yes. Let's see what else. At, I guess this, this will be the last one. At WC Witt asks, is Homecoming the best use of the MCU as a shared universe outside of the team-up movies? I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm trying to think of anything that even comes close.
We didn't even talk about the Captain America videos they show at the high school. Like, what a great use of that. Yeah. Oh, man.
And also, we didn't talk about how all that awesome stuff of seeing what happened with him and Civil War from his point of view.
Oh, that whole opening, a short film up here. We're going to have to talk more about Spider-Man.
Yeah, let's try to make plans to go see it again. And because I've got another friend who hasn't got to see it yet that definitely wants to go. So we should do that. And then maybe even have maybe we get April involved. We could have a whole sort of round table thing. All right, everyone. Have you got enough time for me to read this thing real quick?
Sure.
Now, besides Matt, you guys may remember that I have another big time Spider-Man fan in my circle of friends. You may remember from the first episodes of Comics Rule Everything Around Me, and that is Joe Martini, Martini Man Joe. I texted him and was like, Joe, you've got to give us the Martini Man review of Spider-Man Homecoming. So let me read you guys Joe's review. This is what he texted me back. He said, well, I mean, I obviously loved it. We truly walked into the movie we were promised, and that was wonderful. Although during the intense scenes, I just kept thinking, oh, no worries. If it gets bad, Tony will bail him out. Which I didn't like, but that's my only complaint. And as someone who's been reading the character for 20 or so years, that's awesome. But why did Ned have to be Ned and not just be Gonky? Yeah. How do you say it?
Gonky's how I say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then he's got that emoji of the guy thinking with his hand on his chin. And then he said, and I said, is there anything else you want to add for the listeners? And he said, did you notice that Toomes is never referred to as the Vulture? Interesting question. Interesting.
Yeah.
And he said, do you think that what's her name is actually Mary Jane?
I do.
I don't.
Okay.
But I mean, the reason I'm saying that is because Kevin Feige said, he was like, we just did that as a thing.
Disinformation. I think just because.
But her name's Michelle.
She's a beautiful actress. And I would bet she blossoms into a more familiar version of Mary Jane over the course of a few films. That's my bet.
Okay.
But yeah.
I mean, I think that she could be a totally different take on that kind of character.
Yeah.
But her personality seems sort of so different from Mary Jane that I'm fine with her just being her own character.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be beholden to the comics for everything. And also love the comedy with the kids. It really felt like high school. Yeah. I would absolutely agree with that. Oh, man. Hold on. We don't have time to talk about it. But speaking of that, I'm going to make a note so that when we talk about this again, we will remember this thing that I said we absolutely have to talk about.
Okay.
So I think that's everything for right now, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Getting to talk about, we're definitely going to talk about Spider-Man some more. So if you've got more questions, send those in to keepitclosetomepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can tweet them to @KICTMpodcast. Or you can just tweet them to me @TheChrisHaley. Maybe put something in there that it's for the show in so that I know that you're not just asking me. But follow Matt on Twitter @XAMattDrain. Mm-hmm. All this stuff will be in the show notes. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/TheChrisHaley. All of this stuff is in there. Get a friend to listen to the show. Tell some people. Tweet about it. Just if you're enjoying the show, help us out with letting people know that it's a show worth listening to, because that is, word of mouth is always the best advertising. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you all. And I'll just leave you with this. Oh, it didn't record anything. Are you serious? very slowly.
Well, she just found that UPS package.
Oh, that's right. Man, good on you. Good memory on Matt. Hey, sweetie.
Hi.
Do you want to come join us to talk about Spider-Man?
Oh, y'all are still recording?
Yeah.
For like, what time is it?
We've only got a little bit longer.
Like 15 more minutes.
You don't have to. You can just be quiet.
Okay.
If you can.
You can be loud.
I would rather you not.
You're banging
some pots and pans together. Yeah.
She comes in just, hi, I'm so great. I'm so great. Is that for me or for you?
For you. You're going to edit this all out, right?
Nope.